What's going on, everybody? Thank you so much for joining us here for this Thursday edition of Fantasy MLB Today. We are a Sports Ethos presentation, and I'm your host, Joe Orrico. Hit me up over on Twitter, at JoeOrrico99. You can also catch all of our new fantasy baseball and baseball content at EthosFantasyBB. That's where all of our podcasts and articles will be posted throughout the rest of the offseason and heading into the regular season as well. Now, we're going to continue with our team previews today. We started off a couple days ago with the White Sox. We're not going in any particular order here. But today is Arizona Diamondbacks Day, and we brought in somebody who I think is in the industry right up there in terms of the best of them with the Diamondback talk and with fantasy baseball talk in general. You guys probably know him as the Welsh, Chris Welsh. Is it the Welsh? However you want to refer to him. He is here joining us for the third time on the podcast. Chris, thank you so much for carving out some time today. Talk some Diamondbacks.
You are too kind. You are too kind, my friend. Thank you very much. This is my team. I live in Arizona. When I moved to Arizona, this team did not exist. I moved into the early 90s. I'm from the Bay Area. I grew up as an A's fan and a Giant, kind of a Giants fan, A's fan, that type of stuff, Bay Area stuff, and then moved out here. So I got to grow. So I have been a Diamondbacks fan before they were even created and they were expansion, everything like that. And I follow them and I get to the backfields and I try to get to them as much as possible. And they have stunk. But it looks like it might change, and there's some pretty fun fantasy options, at least this year, though, too.
Yeah, there's some great young talent mixed in with some older guys there. We're going to talk about all of that in just a second. You want to let us know, because I would rhyme it all off, but there's so much stuff that you do here. I don't want to miss anything. You want to just let the people know real quick where they can find you, what you got going on right now?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's a lot. There's a lot of stuff. The best thing you could probably do if you want to like know what I got going on, follow me on Twitter. Is it the Welsh? I'll post out the stuff, my personal things I host in this league and a prospect show called Prospect One. Those exist on our Patreon, inthisleague.com, where I do like my redraft ranks, prospect ranks, dynasty ranks, first year player. I do this unique thing with prospect ADPs, creating an ADP for prospects. And we just got like a whole world that's in there. And we're an independent podcast. You want to support, you can check me there. You'll also just be, you can hear me on some of the other, the big podcasts like CBS. I'm on CBS once a week. And I do hosting with Joe Pizzapia on Fantasy Pros right now. So yeah, I'm in a lot of places. So Twitter's the best way. And if you want to like really get involved, inthisleague.com.
You got your fingers in all the pies. You're a very busy man. That's why we really appreciate you coming on today. We got some interesting players to talk about. We're going to go through roster resource, just go from the top of the order here. No, we're not going to talk about every single player, but we'll talk about the fantasy pertinent, relevant ones. Right at the top, projected to lead off is the young stud, Corbin Carroll, 22 years old. It's crazy that these players are younger than I am at this point. I'm sure that's something that it's been a thing with you for a while, these players younger than you, but it's just kind of, I'm at that age where it's transitioning to the young stars are a couple of years younger than I am. It feels crazy at this point.
Oh, dude, I remember like, I feel old. I'm not 40 yet, but I'm getting old. So like a lot of people listening, like I am old. But there was that time when I was like at your age, there was that like, I could still play. Like I can still get out there. And then you like start to realize you're like, it's gone. Even if you didn't like play, like even high school ball. But like, you're getting into the age where it's young dudes that have surpassed your age. I am now at the age where like if I were a really young parent, Corbin Carroll could have maybe been, my kid's age, or like I've almost aged out of MLB altogether. So it is tough. And Corbin Carroll specifically, I was actually with him a couple months ago at this autograph signing inside of the private signing. And I was helping the Dennis Sidler, Sid's Graphs, has him as an exclusive client, invited me to be there. And I got to be around Corbin, and he is a smart kid. I saw him when he was like first out of high school with the Diamondbacks, very small. He's still a small guy, but he's just grown physically. It's really impressive. And that's one of those things that kind of, blows your mind too. When you focus on, you're like, oh my God, these guys are younger. But then the way that these baseball players age also, like maturity wise at like, 20, 22, and you see the progression go, it's pretty intense. And Corbin Carroll is like at the top of the list of those guys, very mature, smart, way beyond his years, smart player. And it's interesting to see him on the leadoff spot on roster resource. I don't think it would be every day unless he's just a monster. I do think the Diamondbacks will probably platoon where he would go against righties as he's a lefty. And then I'm really torn on what they're going to do on the opposite end. Maybe maybe Cattell might lead off occasionally. Maybe they'll play around with Lourdes Gurriel. I just don't know if he'll be the everyday leadoff guy. I do think he'll be the against righties leadoff guy, though.
Yeah, I mean, that's something I was going to ask you about. Looking at his splits last year against lefties, he didn't play very much against lefties, which I know was really annoying when he got called up, especially, you know, in your weekly lineups, you set him in there. He's only playing three times or something like that. With the plethora of outfielders that you guys got in Arizona, do you worry that, you know, if he's not performing right as well as he should be right away, that he might lose some at-bats because of that?
I don't know if he's going to lose at-bats necessarily, where I do think it's a possibility that he could lose his spot in the order. Lavella likes to mess around. You know what's so funny is, like, they would just, like, mess around. The Diamondbacks always have, like, with the lineups and stuff. And this last year seemed like it was the first year where he really started letting the team run. And that's why you had, like, you know, Rojas and Jake McCarthy over 20 stolen bases. And, you know, the team is starting to, like, really accept that. That I don't think, unless this was, like, Kelnick level distraction, I really don't see why they would do anything detrimental to him. But at the same time, to your point, there's a lot of outfielders in here. I mean, this roster resource doesn't even list Alec Thomas on the roster. On the bench, you've got Kyle Lewis, who they acquired from the Mariners, and then, you know, they got Lourdes Gurriel, who they picked up, and you've got Jake McCarthy. So I mean, that's like five legit guys that they can work in that outfield. Two of them being lefties in Carroll and Jake McCarthy in the starting lineup. So I want to say that he's untouchable, but, like, he's probably not going to play every single. I bet he takes, like, a game off at least a week, maybe two. And that's why I think they're going to move him around. He's really tough. Like, Steamer projections, I don't agree or with any of the projections. I don't agree with any of the projections. BatX, ATC, Steamer on his stolen bases. Depending where you go, you're going to see different levels of power. I'm looking at the BatX currently. The BatX projects him at 12 homers. And, like, I think Corbin Carroll can actually pass that. I've cited this a whole bunch, anyone that's listened to me. Over 200 ISO at every single level of every single stop in the minors, except for his rookie year at 18 years old in Arizona Complex League. Otherwise, he has had a 200-plus ISO at every single level. And he had, like, 28 homers combined across all levels last year. And this is coming off of the year prior where he had had the shoulder injury. So, like, I think he's a much better power hitter than given, but I'm not making a big argument. 12, 15 homers, whatever you want to do. But they got him at 16 stolen bases in, like, under 130 games. I think he's going to pass that. I think he can lead this Diamondback. Jake McCarthy, actually, in projections, I think on ATC, which is Ariel Cohen's projections, Jake McCarthy with the Diamondbacks is projected the second most stolen bases in the entire league this year. I think that's Corbin Carroll, especially if he succeeds in hitting and he's at that leadoff spot. We'll have to see. I'm very bullish, obviously, on him. I think he's a crazy good talent that beats projections and we're going to be talking about in the future. But, you know, a lot of expectations, and this young leading off isn't an easy task.
Yeah, you see it, like you mentioned with the projections, the BatX has him for 12 homers. Steamer has him for 20. There is some variance there. Yeah. Stolen bases, they're all generally 15, 16, 18. But yeah, I mean, there is still a lot of we don't really know exactly what he can be yet after just 32 games. If you were to take a guess off the top of your head, would he give you, I mean, it's a very tough question. Is he going to outperform what we saw from Bobby Witt and Julio last year? Or do you think that's expecting too much out of him?
I think that's expecting too much. Like, I mean, most projections actually weren't awful with Julio and Bobby Witt last year. I mean, I don't think anyone expected what they got out of Julio. Bobby Witt, I think, was kind of in that general range, though they stole more. You know, the other thing to consider is we've got this new situation with only two pickoffs, you know, per base attempt. You've got bigger bases now that they worked in the Arizona Fall League. Like, those are things that work advantage for base dealers. I've been kind of saying this a whole lot in the offseason as well. If you now have a slight advantage, if baseball team, like, you can go to team A or team B or team C, and maybe one team is, like, analytically driven and maybe another's really not, regardless of analytics or anything like that, if you start just showing a tangible advantage of, hey, listen, the bases are now a couple more inches in and out, or especially in, you know, on the second base side, that we've got, you know, exponential more chance to steal bases now, and they can only hold us over for so long. I imagine all managers are going to want to take advantage of that with players that can have elite speed. And he's a top 1%. Corbin Carroll's a top 1% sprint speed in the MLB. So I say all of that it's like, I think he can really buck the trend and he's going to overpower just a lot of these projections. And I think teams like the Diamondbacks need to take advantage of. They also, the other underspoken thing is like, you got to manufacture runs with a Diamondback. This Diamondback team, just looking at the Bat X, for example, has only one player projected over 20 homers right now. Only one player over 20 homers. If you go to 15 homers or more, that's only three players. So you're going to have to do it in other aspects of the game. If, again, this is just a projection system, but you're going to do it in other spots of the game. And that's going to have to be on the base paths. And that's why I think, you know, Corbin Carroll is going to beat all projections in stolen bases this year. And I feel pretty confident about that.
I think that's a bold take. He didn't steal that much when we saw him in the bigs last year. I'd like to see it over the course of a full season. Obviously, I'm hoping that he can surpass those projections of whatever 15, 18 steals. Last thing about Corbin Carroll, do you like the price this year? About 73rd by ADP in these most 12 or so recent drafts. Are you liking that price?
Nah, I don't love it. I don't love having to pay. Here's the flip and inverse of everything I just said. If we're talking like redraft leagues, I'm not the biggest rookie drafter because of the cause. Like Bobby Witt, funny enough, like Julio Rodriguez exponentially beat his cost because he was like post 200. And then the Mariners came out and said like, no, we're going to give him the shot. And everyone's like, oh my God, he's really going to be able to do this. And then the price started coming up. Bobby Witt had already been built in. Bobby Witt, it was presumed, and he was already inside the top 100. So it was easy for Julio to beat his price. It was tougher for Bobby Witt. Luis Robert had a similar thing. Any of these guys that cost like, you know, between like 60 and 80 and ADP, it's tough for rookies to beat that price. But even Bobby Witt did it. Now, Carroll is like even higher. Him and Gunnar Henderson, they're pushing that Bobby Witt range, maybe even a little bit more aggressive this year. I think it's tough. Just the advantage is we do know he's going to be there the whole time. So like to be safe, I'm going to say like, no, I don't think either one of them can do exactly what, you know, Bobby Witt and Julio Rodriguez did. But you know what? Like, I think Corbin Carroll could even push 30 stolen bases. He had between AA and the majors last year. We were talking about the homers and the homer numbers. He had 28 total homers in the minor leagues from complex up to major leagues last year, but he had 33 stolen bases as well. I mean, this was an almost 30-30 guy counting everything he did this past season. It's probably not out of the realm of possibility that he does a Bobby Witt and pulls a 20-30 with bigger runs. I think it's probably closer though to like 15-25 and we'll be like, man, he did actually return his value. Beating it, I'm just not so sure.
Yeah, I think that's a good call. Beating it is going to take a lot. He's going at the end of the fifth round. You're asking quite a bit, assuming it's a 15-team draft. That's quite a bit of talk on him, though. Let's move on to the number two projected hitter, Ketel Marte. A little bit of a disappointment last season. I think that might be an understatement. It's 240 batting average, 12 homers, 5 steals. What are your thoughts on Marte heading into this year? Are you going to be drafting him where you can because of the scarcity at second base, or what are your thoughts on him?
I'm probably more likely to have some shares because of the cost now. Like he's the most disappointing player on this team to me because I love Ketel Marte. I just think he's exciting. I've been around him on the backfield. He's a great personality. He's so much bigger in person when you see him. He's fast and he does something every year. Drives me nuts. He will have like one of the top 10 or 15 hardest hit balls in all of baseball every single year. But since that 2019, he has not been able to be consistent with it. Like his, you know, average EVs don't usually match up to what he, like. So last year, his max was 115. And the year before that, 116. He hasn't had an under 115 max EV since 2017. Now think about that. That's also a guy who has only hit more than 14 homers once since 2017. And 2019 was it. So the problem with him is like he's got all this immense talent that works in different ways. You know, when he was a pure contact hitter, that one 2019 year, that obviously is an anomaly, he was tapping into everything. Then he stepped off to hit for more contact, lost the power. Then this past year, he was swinging through his shoes every at bat, swinging through his freaking shoes, and he couldn't put the bat on the ball, and he hit 240 and the power also wasn't there. So I don't know who he is anymore. I don't know what player he wants to be. I'd rather him just pick a side because he can't tap into both of these anymore. And I hate that he doesn't run because I really think he could. In 2019, he stole 10 bases. He's only stole 8 since then over the last 3 seasons or 2.5 with 2020. So he's a good cost. Second base kind of sucks, but I don't know where the upside truly is going to be. He's going to hit at a really, solid spot in the lineup. And if the Diamondbacks, I'll tell you this, if the Diamondbacks are going to be this team that everyone's like, oh, they're kind of surprising and fun, it'll be because Ketel Marte is putting in, like, you know, solid number two, number three numbers. Like, and that would make him probably a top 10 second base option. So I think because of the price, he's worth looking at, but he looks kind of devoid of real good fantasy stats. And it's been like that for a couple of years.
Now, the funny thing with Ketel Marte, maybe it's not funny, maybe it's just a reality of his performance these last couple of years, is you're getting him after pick 200 at this point. So there's, yeah. I mean, there's not that much risk associated with it. If you're talking, you know, shallow leagues, you're getting him in one of your last couple of rounds. You may be able to wait on second base if that is something that you want to do, take care of the other positions earlier. Not that he is the most safe option, but like you said, the team could be pretty fun this year. He doesn't need to do a lot more than he did last year, get that batting average back up to even like a career average number of like 270-ish, you know, give you 15 home runs, a couple steals. But it's hard. Like another thing you said is we don't know who he is anymore.
Yeah,
that 2019 season, I mean, everybody in 2019, you kind of take it with a grain of salt because there's some stats you look at that year. I mean, Christian Vasquez, when I was putting together catcher rankings, just as a side note, looking back at him, like his career high in home runs is like 8. And that year he hit 24. The ball was funky. So I don't know if we can really take that much value out of 2019 stats.
Yeah. And the ball keeps changing. That's another thing with it. You know, the funny thing with Ketel too is like, you know, the other guy that qualifies at second base for the Diamondbacks we're going to talk about, Rojas, he provides a more elite fantasy stat. Ketel Marte right now, when he is hitting consistently, is not much better than Jeff McNeil. I mean, it's just a high contact guy with teens homers, not a ton of stolen bases. Jeff McNeil has a better chance at runs. Ketel maybe a little bit more in RBI. So I look at this and I would go like, that's another problem as well, actually, now that I think about it. My middle infield is usually a shortstop. And I don't want to wait on second base because it can get ugly. You can, and it may have to happen. But if it happens, I'm probably looking at buybacks on like maybe a Brandon Lau or go for stolen bases on Grisham. So then, you know, when you get into the 190s, you're usually not picking up starters unless they're an outfielder. And Ketel then would be a middle infielder, but shortstop is so deep. I'd rather go and pick up a bigger, better power hitter, maybe like a Jeremy Pena or something as my middle infielder. So that's why Ketel just doesn't fit the mold, but there definitely is potential out there for him. If he can, you know, if he can get back to that 2019 vibe, I just worry, like I said, his upside feels like it's Jeff McNeil at this point, unless he becomes a different player, which we have no, you know, we have no idea that that's going to happen.
Yeah, that's a great comp. It's pretty, I mean, they're going in a relatively similar range here, round pick 200, if McNeil outperformed Marte, I wouldn't be shocked by it at all.
No.
Let's talk about the projected number three hitter in the order. It seems crazy that he is projected to hit number three, but Jake McCarthy, we mentioned him earlier, came on the scene last year, was a league winner by definition. He came on in the second half, 23 stolen bases, 283 batting average. He's projected, like you said, to steal a lot of bases this year, 30 by ATC, 28 by the Bat X. I just have a hard time believing he's actually going to reach these numbers. Do you think that we're going to fall into a trap of hoping for last year's stats from him when it's kind of maybe a flash in the pan?
Yeah, I think it's possible. It's a good, I've always kind of said, like, I think it's tough, especially without like a track record. It's tough to pay this year for last year's stats. You know, it's like that old, like, I'll take a burger and pay you tomorrow, whatever that was. I can't remember the cartoon. You probably don't even know what I'm talking about. It's an old cartoon of that old bald guy. He's like, the burger, I'll pay you tomorrow. McCarthy just doesn't have not even a big minor league track record either. Something I find interesting, really, really interesting actually with him is the upside on projections that there's no downside. Like they're not building it in. Last year he hit 283, which was great. But he had a 249 XBA, 427 slugging, a 357 X slug. And those are, you know, expected stats, which kind of shows you like, it doesn't look like it's really, really sustainable. Projections have him at a higher batting average, 257, and the stolen base is not going away. This is also them assuming like that Lavello will be hyper aggressive. And I've also heard rumblings that Jake McCarthy is being dangled out there. I personally don't think McCarthy is an everyday third hitter. Maybe against righties, they're going to experiment with it and they'll play around. I just don't think that's going to be the everyday thing. I think McCarthy actually makes a little bit more sense to be near the bottom of the order if they want to play that leadoff guy towards the end, except if he's hitting really consistently. But this is another lefty in the lineup. The reason it makes sense is like the Diamondbacks could go Carroll, Marte, McCarthy, like Roster Resource has, and you can go lefty, righty, lefty with Cattell being a switch hitter. And then you can go righty, lefty again based on what they've got going on. So, yeah, I think his cost is a little high, but, you know, his stolen base rate was exceptional. And assuming the Diamondbacks let him keep going and he does play the majority of every day, he's going to put up 20 plus stolen bases. I just don't know where the other stuff is going to be. So I get worried that this is another one of those we're paying like a top 100. He's almost top 100. I'm not looking currently what it is, but I think he goes around like 115, 120 on NFBC. And you're paying a really heavy price for a guy that might not be more than a one category player.
Yeah, I'm looking at the drafts that have taken place since Christmas. There's been 16 of them. He's going to pick 120. He is the 28th outfielder off the board, right in front of Christian Yelich. Would you rather have Jake McCarthy or Christian Yelich 2023?
Oh man, that's kind of tough. I probably Christian Yelich. I still go Yelich on there. Like, I'll say this, and I might be really wrong about this, and I might be underselling Jake McCarthy, but I would be surprised if Jake McCarthy beats Corbin Carroll in any of the top five categories. I really would. I would be surprised if one single five category runs, RBI, stolen bases, homers, batting average, that McCarthy beats Corbin Carroll in this year. That's how I feel about all that. It's not to be down on Jake McCarthy. It's just, I think Corbin Carroll is better. I think we're going hyper on Jake McCarthy. I'll still draft him. I still got him high. If I can get 20 plus stolen bases, I like it. I just don't know if the power is going to be there. Steamer way higher, 15 homers, which would make him, I think, a crazy different price of value of a player. Bad X, 10 homers, 28 stolen bases. It's still good. It's still solid and everything like that. But I just don't know if he can return that value.
The only place where he might beat Carroll, assuming Carroll leads off, is RBI, but I agree with you.
Yeah, good point.
Carroll is, I think, far and away the better player.
I wouldn't be surprised if Carroll moved into being the number three hitter on this team. I mean, he is built to be a high-end contact hitter and totally can be a leadoff guy. Might be like the league quintessential leadoff hitter, but I would not be shocked if he got put into that role. You know, if Josh Rojas ended up taking over, he's not really a great leadoff hitter, but just, you know, for argument's sake here, you know, he could go in, or even Cattell or something like that. I just wouldn't be surprised, but that's a good point. If McCarthy was the number three, he's probably going to outdo the RBI on Carroll.
But that's pretty much it, though. I'm not trying to push back there on that general point you're trying to make. I think that that's a very likely outcome, and I think the price is generally reflecting it, considering Carroll's about 50 spots higher. Number four in the lineup, you alluded to him earlier, not by name, but you said only one player is projected to hit 20-plus home runs in this lineup. I love who we're going to talk about here, Christian Walker. I had him ranked in my top 10 first baseman. What are your thoughts? Do you think he can repeat last season?
Yeah, I'm actually really surprised at like the decimation of his power based on projections. He had the league's worst BABIP in the first half last year. It was like the easiest tell. It's like he's gone up rebound in the second half. You have the league's lowest BABIP, you're going to get better. He ended up having like a 280 batting average in the second half. I think it was like 202 or something in the first half. He ended with a 242 batting average with 36 homers, 84 runs, 94 RBI. That's the stuff we would always tell ourselves about like Joey Gallo. Like, man, if he could just hit like 230 or 240. If Walker can hit 240, he's going to hit 30 plus homers. So that's why I'm confused where he's hitting 249 or 252 based on what projection you're looking at. No projection has him over 30 homers. I do think that's going to change. 44% hard hit rate, which is pretty solid. He over 10, it's actually 11.5% barrel percentage. Xlug and expected batting average, both better than his actual results this past year. And average EV was 90. And I think Christian Walker is just a really solid cleanup hitter for this team. And I think repeatability is definitely on the table for Christian Walker.
Yeah, the price is really not too bad either. 141. I mean,
no, he's a good deal
at that rate. I think he's a great bargain. Like I said, he's my 10th ranked first baseman. Not too much I can really say about him other than the fact that I'd be drafting him wherever you can there in round 9 or so, if you're talking 15 teamer. Really love him. But the next guy in the lineup here, Josh Rojas, you also mentioned him earlier. He actually quietly had a very good season last year. I don't know if the average baseball fan would even really realize, but for fantasy purposes, he'd be 23 steals, 9 homers, batted 270. Going forward, I really like Rojas, considering especially second base eligible. I'm not sure if he's going to retain third base eligibility. No, he does. He will have second and third base eligibility. Yeah. That's in and of itself makes him a pretty valuable pick in any draft. What are your thoughts on him?
Yeah, I mean, I liked Rojas even a little bit more before they brought on Evan Longoria, but the team has come out and said that Longoria will not play every day, and they also have him slotted as a DH. Rojas is going to get the opportunity. They've got Nick Ahmed, who's a Gold Glove defensive shortstop, has all the injuries in the world and is bad offensively. That's another place where Rojas can play at shortstop. He's like a big super util guy. If this holds true, like he's hitting five, he's third base, and he's playing almost every day, then I think he's a crazy deal. I really do. I haven't even taken a look to see where his ADP, as ADP is almost in the 200s on NFBC. It's around like the 190 range with two positions. That's great eligibility. Projections have him around 120 games. If he can push to closer to 140, then I think you're probably, again, looking at like a 20 stolen base. Similar to last year. It's like relatively similar to last year because this is the type of hitter he is. He can be aggressive, and it would be amazing if this team had 320 stolen base guys. But I mean, the key here is Ahmed can't stay healthy and Longoria will not play every day. And in that not playing every day, it's probably also not going to have to be at third base. So Rojas is going to be out there, might even hit closer into the lineup a few times. Yeah, I think he's a good deal. He's a guy I try to draft, and I would prioritize him probably over Ketel Marte.
Yeah, I mean, they're going right at the same spot within three picks of each other. And, you know, second and third base are the two probably worst positions you can talk about. I know catcher is better this year. Still not great. It's probably still one of the weaker positions as a whole. But second and third, I mean, that's pretty damn nice eligibility to get after pick 200.
And one thing to throw out with him as well, when I was telling you about like things that they can do to mess with the spot, like I would be surprised if every single day Jake McCarthy was like the number three hitter, is Josh Rojas bat at every single spot in the order except four last year, 1 through 9. And his most successful was hitting three for this team. He only did 14 games at it, but he hit over 300 hitting three. He also hit over 300 hitting five, but his number one spot was leadoff. So this is why, again, like Josh Rojas might be the against lefties leadoff guy, and then maybe Carroll gets pushed down. But Rojas, McCarthy, and Carroll give this team options to probably switch between 1, 3, 5, and even 9 to move, or 8 or something like that, to move around. And Rojas is a potential guy that maybe could even be a primary hitter at 3 if they want to put a righty there, because Ketel Marte is also a switch. You know, so they could go lefty lefty to start a lineup, and then Rojas is in here, who's been very successful at the 3 spot. So, you know, don't sit on him, that the RBIs might kind of stack up as well.
Yeah, I love him. I love the call all around. Versatile fantasy-wise, real-life-wise. He's a great pick after pick 200, really. I mean, I like to mention this a lot because I try and, you know, a lot of the content in the industry is NFBC-based. Try and talk about those regular 10 and 12-team leagues. If you're playing in the 10-12-team league, he's going to be right with those last couple of picks as well. You can slot him into your starting lineup probably pretty comfortably, or you could have him as bench depth either way. I love the pick there. Now, next we got a former Blue Jay. This one kind of hurt a little bit when I heard he was included in the trade that happened recently between these two teams. Not that he was so exceptional. I mean, he could be kind of a goofball in the outfield, but just a fan favorite in general. Lourdes Gurriel Jr., now at Diamondback, coming off of not a bad season. He hit almost 300, but the power just disappeared, kind of similar to what happened with Andrew Benintendi in a way. Just no home runs this past season. He's projected to kind of rebound in that regard. ATC has him for 14 dingers. 15 on Steamer, 11 on the bat. What do you think about Lourdes Gurriel? Do you think, first of all, do you think his job is secure there, considering what we mentioned earlier, all the outfielders? And do you think that he'll be a fantasy relevant option this year?
I don't know if his job is secure. He's a free agent, I believe, after this season. You know, so this is like more depth. I don't think this is the team committed to him or anything like that. I think he's going to rebound. I haven't seen this in all the guys that I've looked at. He's the only guy I've seen that had a slug and X slug that were identical. It was 400 on both sides. He had about an almost 20 spot decrease on his expected batting average from his 291. And he had, you know, homer and stolen bases combined 8. And that's Luis Arraez. But Luis Arraez, you're going to get better batting average. You're going to get a league winning batting title batting average. So like at the end of the day, sure, I think it's going to be hard to be a 5 home run hitter again in 120 games, where he had hit 32 the two prior years, and one of those was the COVID year. He had never hit under 10 in any season, or 11 under any season. Yeah, I think he'll rebound. He's probably something between a 10-15 homer, a handful of stolen base guy who's going to hit lower in the lineup. I don't find a real reason why I would want to push on him. Because also, again, like I point out, guy's a free agent at the end of the year. If this team does make a commitment back to Alec Thomas, which I know they truly believe, they haven't involved him in trade talks, and they also got Kyle Lewis. Kyle Lewis rebounding from injuries. It was rookie of the year. That I just don't think anything is secure. What Lourdes Gurriel provides is a little bit more veteran leadership, depth to play across the board. And I don't see him needing to be an everyday player. So he's not really a priority in fantasy. I think he's a better real life player than he is fantasy.
Yeah, I think totally agreed. He's more of an outfield depth, even though he's projected to start and probably take a look at his projections for games played. I think he's probably going to be up over 100.
130 on pretty much, it looks like every single one of them, which is pretty extra, which is, you know, it's a pretty big number. We got Kyle Lewis on the bench and Alec Thomas not on this roster. So I think, you know, under this circumstance, he is the starter. I just don't think it's an everyday guaranteed with all the movement. Like the Diamondbacks, you don't want to take Carroll. If you're going to commit to McCarthy, you don't want to take Carroll and McCarthy like out of this lineup as much as possible, but you also had to have a righty in there. And that's why, you know, he would definitely make sense and they'll move around. I just think Kyle Lewis is going to get a little bit of an opportunity as well.
He should. I mean, he hasn't really had it outside of that rookie season. He's been injured for a couple years now. We don't really know his true potential either. One last question about the starting lineup here, the projected starting lineup. What do you think is going to happen in terms of the catching at bats? Do you think Carson Kelly is going to get the majority? Do you think my old guy, Gabriel Moreno, is going to be given a shot? I think he should be given a shot, but what are your thoughts there from the insider's point of view?
I think Carson Kelly is the starter. Moreno is starter B. I think it's going to be a 1A, 1B situation by May-ish. I think in the beginning, it's going to be more Carson Kelly. So let's say there's six games in a week. I think it's 4 Carson Kelly, 3 Gabriel Moreno. I think it starts to move depending how the team really enjoys his ability to catch. You know, how is he working with the pitchers? What game can he call? And you got to think about some things. There's some veteran guys in here. Will Madison Bumgarner be comfortable with a rookie as his caller? Probably not. It's probably going to be Carson Kelly. Maybe the same thing is going to go with Merrill. Like, do you want to screw with Gallen and Kelly and them if Carson is the better game caller? Because I mean, think of that. I mean, I'd have to go back and look. One thing I didn't do was go and look and see like who was a primary catcher for all three of those guys. But then you get some young guys that you can develop with, and you know, Dre Jameson and everything. So I just think it's going to be primarily Kelly to start, which could be annoying. It'll move to Moreno, and if Moreno plays well defensively and is hitting, you're not going to be able to keep him off the field. This is the future. They did this trade to build him up, and he'll start to take over. So I'm not excited about Moreno from a redraft perspective this year, and I might be wrong, and spring training might tell us a completely different story. He's more of a dynasty grab right now because he is lowest he's ever been in dynasty because he didn't hit. He had no homers. Everyone's down on him. He stinks, blah, blah, blah. And this was like one of the number one guys. He's still near the top of, you know, many true baseball prospect, like Baseball America's list. This is a great catcher, and I would buy him in dynasty like crazy. I just don't know if the Diamondbacks love catchers. I'm surprised they haven't gotten a third catcher in here. I just don't think they're going to hand over. And if you guys are expecting Gabriel Moreno of 6 games to be catching 4 of them, I just don't think that happens anytime before July. But if it happens, hooray.
You know, the narrative that he sucked, I mean, he didn't have a lot of power, but he hit .319. He struck out only 11% of the time in the bigs. He didn't have a lot of playing time because the Blue Jays were blocked at catcher, which is why he's no longer a Blue Jay to begin with. I mean,
also bad launch angle, ground ball. Like, he suffered from kind of like a Vlad thing. He couldn't get the ball up in the air. He can hit it hard, but he just wasn't getting the ball up. And those are fixable things. Those are things that can absolutely be fixed. That's why giving up on Gabriel Moreno just doesn't make sense. Just buying crazy into him this year is not like where I'm at.
Yeah, the skills are there for him to be a very successful. I mean, I don't even know if he's a catcher long term. There was talk in Toronto before the trade of maybe he ends up as a third baseman or a corner outfielder because he's pretty agile. I don't know if he needs to be behind the plate long term. We'll see what ends up happening with him.
Yeah,
but yeah, I really hope he ends up in the starting lineup sooner than later. I got a share in a DC already.
Yeah, I mean, and I'm open to it. I don't want to, like, in an NFBC format, I'm much more likely to take Gabriel Moreno than I am in probably anything else, depending what people play in. Like, normal, like, 12-team head-to-head categories or points or whatever, or Roto, unless it's super deep. I'm open to it being better, but, like, the Diamondbacks got him to be a catcher. You know, they traded a guy that was a pseudo catcher to get a catcher in Varsho for Moreno. I got to see Moreno in 2020 in the Arizona Fall League, and he was always a catcher. He came in a little bit late. He did some workouts at third base there, but I think this guy, unless the framing falls apart or, you know, his arm falls apart or something like that, this team made this trade to make sure that they have a future catcher. And they've been doing this. They traded the worst trade of all time. Diamondbacks fans will always look at Paul Goldschmidt's trade. Awful, horrible. Carson Kelly was one of the main pieces in there. There's a catcher. This team is always chasing a catcher that they can just bank on for 10 years. And this was why that move is going to happen. So I do think he stays there. Otherwise, like, why trade Varsho if you just, it was only because you don't think you can pay him? You know, why trade him off when he could help you now? I think it's to build this guy up with not only a couple of veterans, but like Madison and Merrill are going to be gone at some point soon. So let Moreno work with Gallen and this crew of young pitchers that are going to come up, and Brandon Pfaadt and Dre Jameson and Ryan Nelson. And that gives you an advantage, similar to like what the Orioles are doing with Adley.
Yeah, it's hard because the Diamondbacks are not in like competitive baseball mode. They're not going to be, you know, probably too competitive this year.
They think they are though. I mean, they always do this thing, but they really actually do think they are in their current state. Otherwise they would have sold off. They would have given a prospect to a team to take Madison Bumgarner like they did with Bronson Arroyo. They wouldn't have signed Evan Longoria just because he lives here as a deal. They think they can be sneaky competitive while building. They're kind of doing like what a lot of fantasy owners, you know, if you ever start like a restart dynasty draft and it's like, all right, what should I do? Do I go all in, win now? Do I just take all the young guys and build for the future? And then you're like, let's just see how this draft goes. And you start to go and you take a couple like solid dudes. Maybe you take like one over 30 guy and you take some 28-year-old guys. And all of a sudden you're like, can I not take this rookie? I got to take this rookie. And then all of a sudden you walk out of it and you've built a roster that looks good, but you got two or three guys that are not doing anything. They're in the minors this year, but they were just too good of values. And it's like you have one foot in and one foot out. And that's how the Diamondbacks are. They really feel that they are going to be competitive. And some people feel that division is more open than it's ever been before. It's kind of laughable though. Like when Juan Soto was added to the division and, you know, I don't know. I mean, I guess Aaron Judge didn't get added, so I guess that's positive. But yeah, I didn't mean to go on a tangent there. But the Diamondbacks really believe they are going to be in it and competitive until they're not this year, which will push how they treat and they move players. That's why handing it over to Moreno is not something I see them doing right away, because they got to go with a guy that's going to, you know, nurture those veteran pitchers.
I mean, the division's probably not open. The Dodgers and the Padres are looking to be at the top. I don't think the Dodgers are quite as good as maybe we're expecting. I don't think they're going to be as good as last year. Just looking at their lineup, it really thins out in the second half. But you factor in, like you said, Juan Soto joining the division. It kind of balances out for losing Trey Turner. Overall, I don't think the Diamondbacks, in fact, I would bet my life on it that they're not going to win this division or probably even make the playoffs this season. So maybe they should give Moreno a bit more of a chance just to see what they got with him. But it'll be interesting to see how these at-bats.
They feel their pitching. They feel their pitching is the thing that's going to be the X factor. If they're manufacturing runs and they've got, you know, Bumgarner, Merrill Kelly played great last year, Gallen, if those guys keep them in games that they can steal some games. They didn't really do anything with their bullpen, which is unfortunate. So this is one of those things where it's like, they're like, yeah, we're going to be kind of competitive. And we're all looking, we're like, you're not really going to be competitive. You're just kind of holding over the next 2 years. That's why Jordan Lawler might be a possibility this year. I mean, the next 2 years is the really key developmental time for the Diamondbacks, where they might be scary once Lawler is up and Carroll has established and if these young pitchers actually work out, then we can start talking. But yeah, it's a weird situation they're in.
You mentioned the pitching there. We'll talk about it for just a few minutes here. Zach Gallen is pretty clearly the number one. I don't know if there's a clearer number one that I can think of off the top of my head in baseball. After him, the rotation is difficult to nail down. You know, Merrill Kelly had a good year last season, but if he can repeat it, it's kind of unknown. We know Madison Bumgarner is not going to do much. I know your thoughts on Zach Davies. You don't like much about Zach Davies. I actually got a good laugh listening to ITL recently and hearing you go on a rant, call him a scumbag or something like that.
It's just a personal thing. Yeah. There's a story out there that I've always been bugged that the Diamondbacks reporters don't press on him, but they probably were given a don't talk about this. But yeah, the guy just like ghosted his wife and just disappeared. Didn't stop talking to her. And she was like trying to get a hold of him. He completely stopped talking to her. There was no reason. She posted about it on Instagram and he's never spoke about it because the Diamondback reporters are cowards or, you know, they've been putting on a muzzle or anything. And the Diamondbacks brought him back, which is like, it's why with all these young pitchers that they have too, they brought this guy back and it takes away a theoretical opportunity because you're talking about him because he's listed as the number four starter on roster resource. And that's like taking away from probably three or four different young pitchers that could be there. I mean, I hate the move. Maybe he's, you know, he's still a fine pitcher and stuff. And maybe there's more of a story behind it, but you know, he goes to his wife. He stopped speaking. I think she was pregnant too. Stopped speaking to them and just disappeared. So
yeah, not exactly a stand-up individual based on that account. And he's also bumping Dre Jameson out of the rotation, it looks like. As a whole, what are your thoughts of this pitching staff? I mean, other than Gallen, I know everybody's fairly big on Gallen. Maybe you are, maybe you're not, I'm not sure. But what are your thoughts in general? I mean, he's the only guy projected for a sub-4 ERA, and it's not even that far below four here. Do you think that this pitching can hold up over the course of a season?
Yeah, I think it's sneaky. Like Merrill is a Merle, as we'll call him sometimes, but 200 innings this past year, which was solid. Low three ERA. He had an xFIP that stayed still in there. He had like right at a four Sierra. You know, these are all just like ERA predictor numbers. 13 wins, which, and this is like a solid number three in a team. He kind of gets pushed to number two. And then not in a Bumgarner. I think Gallen is a freak. I mean, the guy can, he'll just get into these spurts where he doesn't give up runs for like 40 innings. He goes deep. He's a quality starts monster. Even with this Diamond, see, the one cool thing about this Diamondback team they have is they are defensively pretty sound. Nick Ahmed, gold glove guy, Walker, incredible defender. You got Cattell, who's great. Rojas is great. That infield is phenomenal. That outfield, it's one of the fastest outfields in baseball. Corbin Carroll, 1% sprint speed. You go and put Jake McCarthy in there. Now, if you put like Kyle Lewis out there, it's a little bit questionable. It's an insane. So again, look at the mold of what this team is. It is solid pitching with incredible defense. And that's almost kind of like in football terms. That's like, let's have a great defense and just hope that the offense doesn't screw it up. Just score enough points to keep us in it. And that's how the Diamondbacks are going to go. Just score enough runs to keep us in it because they've got these veteran pitchers with an astounding defense because Bumgarner is kind of washed and Gallen is a superhero. The back end is the question. Roster Resource has Ryan Nelson as the number three. I think that could happen. Dre Jameson, I think, is pretty electric. Great slider, great fastball. He'll get an opportunity. And Brandon Pfaadt led all minor league pitchers last year in strikeouts and is just he's just a monster. And I would love to see him get a real opportunity. But, you know, having two rookie pitchers into a team that's trying to compete is probably not the way that they want to go and maybe want to manage some innings. So I think that's this is like classic baseball stuff. Like they don't want to throw two of these guys. They might let Dre and Ryan both break camp and maybe they switch off between being starters unless someone pulls it. I don't think Zach Davies is guaranteed to hold on to this either. I just think there's a little bit of openness still that's going on with this rotation.
So for the redraft in 2023, you got Dre Jameson going at 344, Brandon Pfaadt at 393, Ryan Nelson at 460. How would you order them in terms of just 2023 viability?
I think it's that. Like, I like Ryan Nelson. I actually spoke to him in spring training last year about other stuff. He's a really smart pitcher, but Dre is the guy for me. And if Brandon Pfaadt won the job, I would skyrocket him up because that's one of those guys that already put up you have a lot of conversation around players that need to build up their innings and stuff. Like Brandon Pfaadt kind of did that. You know, he already did that with big strikeout numbers. I don't think the Diamondbacks would be too worried about having to press him down a little bit. And I think that's also what they see. I think they see we got three guys that can fill a number five over time unless one runs away with it. I think two can, but I would go with Dre Jameson at the top. Then I would go with Pfaadt. And if Ryan Nelson wins the job, I just don't think like he's a number five I'm trying to go for in fantasy. The other two I would because I think the strikeout numbers could really be there. And if Dre Jameson wins the job, it means his command is progressing and he's got some big power stuff. He's an incredible athlete too. So I really like Dre Jameson and we'll probably learn a lot about him in spring training. And if they give the opportunity to Brandon Pfaadt, that's one of those guys people are going to want to pay attention to. Again, NFBC, I would draft him. In other leagues at this moment, I probably wouldn't.
Yeah, I'd love to see all three of them. But like you said earlier, I don't know if a team, contending or otherwise, wants to have three rookie pitchers in their starting rotation. It's rookies are volatile as is. And now that's the thing that I keep coming back to, and you're the guy who follows the team. I just don't know how this team can really legitimately look at themselves and think we are a competitive group. We are going to win 90-plus games and make a deep playoff run. They're just so pretty clearly not that. Maybe they get lucky. We know we saw Philadelphia go to the World Series this year. They were pretty clearly not the best team in the National League throughout the regular season. You never know, but it would be a pretty extreme thing for this Diamondbacks team to I mean, they'll probably break 500, but asking much more than that is, I think, probably a little bit too much.
Yeah, I agree. It's just delusion. It's just selling. You're trying to sell your fans on something that is not real. They want people to come out. Hey, we're competitive and stuff. But at the end of the day, it's like this is kind of like the Houston Texans. If anyone pays attention to football, where the Houston Texans had the number one pick locked up, but then Lovie Smith comes out like, we're going to be competitive. We're going to get out there, and they screw themselves on that. Like, that's what the Diamondbacks are. They want to pretend the casual, I don't want to call them dumb, but like the casual fans that just like want to take their family out, watch a game and stuff, want to be like, yeah, man, come on down. We're still out here. We're still playing. We're a good baseball team. Real baseball fans are like, this is not a team that can win. You haven't actually spent money. They always want to, Diamondbacks do this. They're like, well, we're spending money. Our payroll's going up. No, your payroll's going up because you got one of the worst contracts in Madison Bumgarner. You screwed yourself with Zach Greinke, and the contract you did with Zach Greinke cost you Paul Goldschmidt, who would be the Hall of Fame face of your organization. They've mismanaged themselves from top to bottom. And then they come out and they just are just like, yeah, come on out. Come out to a ball game. We're the most fan-friendly team. Come out and have some fun. It's like, well, it's not fun watching you get beat 10-2 every single week in the NL West against the Dodgers. They'll be better. They're not going to win the division. Maybe they'll surprise with a wild card. I will say, if they are doing well mid-season, this team is prime to make a trade because they have all the assets in the world. They're one of the best minor league teams as far as development and stacking up prospects out there, that if they wanted to be aggressive because they were getting close, they could do it. They could go buy a starter. They could go buy a prime bat, but they just don't have that. So they're going to have to be like that. It was like that Royals team, like, what was it, 10 or 15 years ago, where it's like, none of it's great, but all the pieces fit together. Not one piece is one you have to have, but they work really well together. The Diamondbacks could do that if all things work out, but baseball usually doesn't.
Now, I got one more question for you here. I think it's the one piece that is the biggest question mark on this team is the bullpen. There are four guys projected as the closer on roster resource right now. Kevin Ginkle, Joe Mantiply. I think you jokingly refer to him as Man Tipley. I think I have heard once or twice. Mark Melanson, Miguel Castro. It's a shit show. I have no idea who to project. I don't want to draft any of them. Who do you think it'll be? Melanson, because it just always seems to be Melanson.
Yeah, I think it'll be Melanson to start. The next guy to get the opportunity, I'd like to see it be Mantiply. I think that would be the best, but he's a lefty and the value. He's only one of two lefties they currently have projected in this bullpen. So like to put him in a closer spot, I think he would be called, he'd probably be called on more in like a, they call it what, like the fire hose spot, where it's like wherever the prime lineup is in the seventh or eighth would be where you'd go. But, I think this team is like a lot of traditional baseball. I think it's Melanson to start. Ginkle is next up. They did pick up Miguel Castro, who was with the Yankees. That's a possibility. They just don't have any great options. If Dre Jameson doesn't work as a starter and it falls apart, that's a guy that could be a closer, but again, they're not going to, I don't think they would make that transition in season. So Melanson's a guy I'm not super interested. Maybe it'll be Ginkle if you go on to speculate.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to take Melanson anywhere, but he's going past pick 500 in a DC. If you're light on saves, and I think it's not a bad option at that point. I mean, I'm not drafting him in any shallow leagues, but I'm in a DC right now where I'm kind of screwed for saves early on. And I might end up taking Melanson later on just because the way that it works with this guy is wherever he is, he just seems to get the job. So, I mean, they're projecting him for 10 saves here. Maybe he gets 10, maybe he gets his 5, something, but it'll just be some saves that you can get yourself later on down in drafts.
Yeah, I think that's the case. And I think the worry, though, is if this team does fall apart, they'll trade Melanson and he'll be a seventh inning guy for a contender or something like that. They didn't do it this past year, but that's always a possibility. I always think, just honing it back in, something Corbin Carroll had mentioned, he was doing a fantasy football league and he got added into this year because it was Mark Melanson's team and Melanson didn't want to do the management. So Melanson and Corbin Carroll shared a fantasy football team this year in their Diamondbacks league. And Carroll was doing, I think, some of the management for Melanson. So it's some good vibes. It's nice seeing the youngest and one of the oldest guys getting together in the starting lineup.
Yeah, I mean, you talking about earlier, could be their father kind of thing. He'd have to have been like a high school father, but Melanson about to be 38, Carroll 22. Yeah, you've seen crazier things. Evan Longoria as well, one of the elder statesmen. But yeah. Chris, I kept you longer than I anticipated. I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to us about I don't know if it's one of your favorite things to talk about, one of your least favorite things. For me and my Blue Jays can be on either end of the spectrum, but regardless, I really appreciate you taking the time.
Always, man. I really appreciate it. Everybody doesn't know, during first pitch, I got to see Joe. We got to hang out for a tiny bit. It was unfortunate. We only caught each. You caught us at, like, it was so late at night. Yeah. We were so drained, like beyond drained. Me and Frank Stanford from CBS, we're just like sitting on the couch, just absolutely just bong. I was like midnight or 12:30, but we got to chop it up a tiny bit. It was great getting to meet you in person and see you in person. And I hope to do it again in person, and gladly anytime on the pod, my friend.
Yeah, because you weren't going to the conferences and stuff. You were going to the games, and then you'd come back to the hotel after, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So I saw you, I guess it would have been the second night, and I was like thinking about turning in, but everybody had been talking about this poker game. So I thought I'd go check it out, and I saw you sitting there. Spent a lot of time with Frank as well. He's a great guy.
Yeah.
The whole thing is an incredible experience. If you guys haven't been down to Arizona, I'd recommend it. 100%, I'm going to be going there every single year, so I'm sure we'll chop it up again throughout the season, do a pod or two together. But yeah, I'll definitely see you again in Arizona come November.
That's right. Thank you so much for having me, brother.
Yeah, so just once again, you can find Chris on Twitter at @isitthewelsh. You hear him on Leading Off on Fantasy Pros. He's obviously one half of In This League. What am I missing, Chris? Prospect One. What else? Athletic. Man. There's just a little, if you listen to the podcast, you're
I'm like Chris. Super oversaturated. Like, I'm super oversaturated. I appreciate the people that are like, hey, I get to hear you on all this stuff. I could get how you get tired of me really, really quick, but hopefully people don't. But yeah, I mean, I'm on a lot of other platforms, and I got my stuff, Prospect One, All Prospects, Dynasty, and In This League, me and Bogman. We have a ton of fun prepping as everything as we possibly can. So just check it out. If you guys want, you can probably do searches and find us, and the Twitter's the easiest way.
In This League, you guys should check it out. It's one of the most listenable podcasts you're going to find. Baseball, fantasy baseball, any kind of podcast. Some of the best back and forth you're going to hear between Chris and Bogman. Until tomorrow, guys, we'll be doing second base rankings tomorrow. But until then, take care and have a good night, everybody. Cheers.